We are in the last class of this quarter, and I want to express my appreciation for everyone and your participation and enthusiasm for our study. I will eventually be teaching this in a larger adult class, and so this is sort of my plan to experiment here and doing some material, and I feel good about it. Let me just review. We have some that have not been in the class, and just a general review of our study. Our first lesson, we pointed out that God is not to blame for evil. There's a lot of cause for suffering in this life, and one should never blame God for suffering. And then in lesson two, we talked about choose to make God's thoughts your own. And we pointed out that, and a common thing throughout our studies, is that people oftentimes get into a pattern in how they resolve problems that is a pattern of failure. Maybe learn from their homes, and it goes on throughout their life. And we've urged people to be honest, to start where you are. The big, big, big one is to learn how to accept things you cannot change. Learn through God's wisdom, learn what to do with that. We've also talked about learning who you can trust and being careful to be able to learn how to step outside yourself and to see something we'll talk about even in this lesson, to see a pattern of withdrawal. Lesson three is do not flee from what is true. And we talked about choosing reality over fear, of how fear, if it's allowed to dominate us, can create a reality that is not real. And we absolutely refuse to back down from that false reality, punishing those who will try to talk to us. We then talked about stop playing the blame game, which is another form of misdirection, of almost dishonesty, really dishonesty in the way we described it, where rather than facing your own responsibilities, you sought to blame others. And then in lesson four, we talked about self-pity and how self-pity is a common reaction when things have gone bad. You preach your own funeral. You have this terrible feeling, the old children's song, nobody loves me, everybody hates me, I'm going out and eat worms. And that was kind of very typical self-pity when it comes into our life. We talked about how to defeat that. And then we talked about how we can avoid false expectations. Sometimes our emotions become so high and we just get this pattern because we really don't have a correct understanding of what to expect of others or of ourselves. And so we see throughout all of this that we need God's help. And so our last lesson is allow God's wisdom to heal your wound. And we pointed out, we've used a simple illustration. If you had a child that had a wound and it was dirty, what you do as a mother is you clean that wound out so the wound can heal. And God gives us wisdom in how we can clean a wound out. You know, and I made the point in the lesson, I vividly remember my dad saying this to me many times. When he would used to teach me how to do some carpentry and hammer and nail, and what's a teenager going to do, or even an adult going to do very long if you got a hammer and nail? You're going to pop that thumb. And I'm sitting there, oh! And my dad would say, son, 20 years from now, you won't know the difference. And he's right. But emotional wounds are that way. Emotional wounds, you can have a wound that could occur in your teenage years that you can take with you the rest of your life. And there's a way to not bear your wound, but to heal your wound. And so to finish our study, we thought we would, you know, sometimes you got these programs, What Not to Wear, which I find uninteresting, you know, because I don't know what to wear. That tells me what to wear. Many times, if you see me in some really odd outfit, I've chosen it, okay? So I'm not really interested in trying to learn what to wear necessarily here. But I thought we'd end our study on how to have a miserable life. And so if you don't want to learn, you know, then here's a way to have a miserable life. And so we talked about let your emotions dictate your actions. We talked about feed your hurt so your anger never goes away. Have you met some people? They love to talk about some past hurt. Woo! And maybe they get a group together and they can share their past hurts. Chuck, you know what I call a group of people like that, don't you?
The Fellowship of the Miserable. You always laugh. He laughs at my joke on that every time. So, you could have a Fellowship of the Miserable. You know, we could share all the bad things people have done to us. That's not very wise.
And then we were at this section. This is where we're going to pick up, and we're going to finish today, this outline. Refuse to be reconciled with God or man. And this gets along the same line of, you want to keep going. And, do we have some false expectations when we're hurt by another person? Is it possible? What do we tend to do? We've been hurt by somebody. What do we tend to do? How do we view it? In terms of right and wrong, yes.
It was intentional.
We could read the mind. What else? We didn't do anything to contribute to it, right? Now, I realize sometimes we may be 100% lily white innocent. Oh, they just did that. But a lot of times when you kind of look at it, we might have participated. Yeah, every situation is different. But we tend to emotionally, we're absolutely right, and that person's not just wrong, but it's intentional, and we know the depths of the evil within that person. They may have been a real close Christian friend, a few minutes ago, but now they're the most terrible person. That's what emotion does for us. But if we don't have the ability to step back and reason and have proper counsel, it can take us in a bad place. I'll tell you, I can get pretty fired up when I've been treated unjustly. I'm normally a laid-back guy. I'll never forget in high school. I still remember. I was a laid-back guy. I'd never get in trouble with teachers. Now, I do things in the background they never know I did. And that's the way I worked. I was the subtle guy. But I'll never forget one time when I came to school. I had to go to the boys' counselor the moment I came to school because I had received 20 demerits. Back in my day, 40 demerits gets you expelled. I never had a demerit. And I got 20 demerits. That's the most severe punishment a teacher could put on a student. And I'm going, what? The band director gave me 20 demerits. Why? I didn't show up at the veterans parade, which I did. And I marched and my fingers froze. I was in the parade, but I got this. And so here I was, righteous. And I'll never forget it. I got those 20 demerits, and the boys' council was just exasperated. I think he gave out 600 demerits this morning. He had all these people that didn't make the parade. And so I had to stay there and talk to him, and then I went into the band room, and the director was conducting the band. I walked right through the middle of the band while he was conducting and took those 20 demerits and hit his music stand. Music goes everywhere. Why did I get this? And he apologized. I didn't get in trouble for that. But, we can get pretty fired up when we're done wrong, can't we? We can. Let's look at some verses. Are we the first person on the face of the earth who's ever been done wrong? No. No, if you're going to live in this life, you're going to be done wrong. If you're going to be a Christian, you're really going to experience that. Listen to David, Psalms 35:19. Let them not rejoice over me who are wrongfully my enemies. Neither let them wink with the eye who hate me without a cause. Psalm 69:4. Those who hate me without a cause are more than the hairs of my head. They are mighty who would destroy me, being my enemies wrongfully. Though I have stolen nothing, I still must restore it. Did David experience that? Sure he did. It was Saul. He had the entire army of the nation of Israel after him. He did nothing but want to help Saul. But you know what David really wanted in this? David wanted reconciliation. David could have killed Saul on one occasion, couldn't he? And he tried to plead with Saul, look, here, I could have killed you. And Saul, you're more righteous than I. But Saul never really repented. The Bible said after that occasion, David decided to go to the Philistines. He just kind of gave up. But we can face situations where people are unreasonable and they will not reconcile.
But I want to tell you, we always ought to be the kind of people, regardless of who has done wrong to us, that we'd like things to be made right. Let me ask you, if we have that attitude, how are we going to act toward those who've wronged us? Let's talk about Christians. Let's talk about Christians wronging Christians. Let's be practical. If someone has wronged us, what should our attitude be?
Swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath.
Yes. Continue to develop this. Someone has wronged us. What should we want to do? What should we do? What should our attitude, actions be?
I think we should go to them and ask what we may have done that caused them to feel this way toward us.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really good attitude. And I'll tell you, in marriage, you need to learn this. You need to learn this in any relationship. You want to communicate. It's easy to shut down communication when you're angry. And there have been times, and Dad and I have had these experiences, and with others, where sometimes my mate is talking to me, and there are some things that are not accurate in that discussion. I found the one thing that's not accurate. Yeah, the other things are really accurate. Now, I could jump on the one thing that's not accurate and just build a mountain out of it. And I hope I haven't done that. I've really tried consciously not to do this. What should I do? Should always look at what I need to hear and what I have done wrong. It's amazing when you have that attitude of how you can lower the tension, of how you can have communication occur. And there are times where somebody's talking to me, it really looks like, well, you really should have seen this, you really should have known this, but you know another thing I like to do when I work with somebody? How would you have want a person to work with you when there's been some misunderstanding occurred? Would you want them to make allowances for you? Would you want them to assume the best of you? You see, these are things that when we're emotional, we commonly don't do that. We're judge, jury, and executioner, and we want this person nuked. We want them bowing before us. I've done wrong. Now, by the way, if they've done you wrong, you would certainly, it's right to have one an apology. But you see what I'm saying? We want to live in the real world. Now, the real world doesn't mean we ignore wrong or bury wrong, but the real world is I'm trying to seek to reconcile before God and men. And sometimes we take a hard line that's not based on reality.
Proverbs 14:16, a wise man fears and departs from evil, but a fool rages and is self-confident. You want to be as confident that you know what in another person's heart, just get mad. And you are so confident. You just know.
Remember that. Anger can just cause you to shut your eyes to what's real.
Proverbs 23:9, do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he'll despise the wisdom of your words. Now, I'm not saying that anybody in this class is a fool. But do you know how to at least, for a period of time, act completely like a fool? You know what you need to do if you want to be a fool and really be good at it?
Just get really angry, and let anger control you. We're talking about this righteous anger, but we're talking about anger controlling you. You can be a fool in that. You can say things, do things, believe things.
And I will tell you, in my life,
I don't have a whole lot of time to deal with fools. If there's somebody that's shutting down reality. Now, of course, we're in a congregation, we have to deal with that differently, but I'm just telling you that in life, if I realize somebody's out here and they're crazy, and I might make a mild statement or something to kind of see if they could be pulled into the rational. But I really don't have a lot of time to argue with a crazy man. I really don't. And anger will make you crazy. When reason doesn't work, I'd rather be somewhere else. And I think we all experience that. And that's part of wisdom. I remember when I was younger as a preacher, I used to think, I could just reason with anybody. I can just, do the Jedi trick here and get people to talk to me, whatever, talk about that movie, the Star Wars movie. But, I used to think I could do that. I'll never forget one time sitting with a guy for 2 hours. And I had another brother with me as an older brother. And finally he whispered, he said, Larry, my time's not very valuable. But it's it's more valuable than this. I'm going home. And I never forgot that because I'm going, you know, I probably should have learned something there. There comes a time when the mind is shut down. You can't help a person.
All you can do is hope that somebody crashes and burns or something happens or somebody that's close to them will get with them and say, hey, you've stopped thinking. Again, another thing that is so important, as we've already talked about, but I want to keep emphasizing this, because if somebody starts living in anger, it will affect your relationships. It'll affect them. We talked the last couple of times about children and the pattern of children, but I'm just talking about relationship in general. Let me tell you what I'm concerned as an elder right here for the church here. I'm concerned when I learn that somebody may be angry and they're not talking. I'm even more concerned when I know of some outside the congregation that have had a history of pulling people away, of trying to reach in, whether that be attending an institutional church or some other place, of trying to reach in and finding out who's angry. You know, a wolf is very capable. We're speaking of a spiritual wolf. The ones that he can most likely pull out of the flock are those who are wounded. And the one who's wounded with anger is a prime target. Look at this, Galatians 4:16. Imagine the ones that Paul had baptized, now believing that he's an enemy. He says, have I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? Now think about it. Why would somebody become our enemy because we tell them the truth? If they're in a rage, they don't want to hear the truth. Now notice what happens next. Here's the people outside courting these people. They zealously court you, but for no good. They want to exclude you, that you may be zealous for them. This verse has really come to mean a lot to me in the recent years, because there's a couple of congregations that I've been very close to that had that very thing happen. People worked in the background, they got a rebellion against the eldership, they got very bitter and angry, and they even reached into other congregations, and they always found the people who had these unresolved hurts. And now they drug them into a movement that is very ugly, doctrinally, believing the most bizarre things, but because they were angry, they would rather believe something different than what those people they hate believe, and that is totally crazy. But that's how factions work. And so again, let's develop another section here. I know I can get really carried away with some of this, but this is one I've really seen. I've seen it with a lot of people that I know. That's why I speak so passionately about this. There's something on the net the other day. There's a brother that's doing this series of lessons called Coming Out of the Pit. And really, they're just some material from this. I like this. This is really good. Hurt people. Yeah? Many grow up in dysfunctional families where the unspoken rule is don't trust, don't feel, don't tell. Wow. If you've come out of a home like that, or if you've developed that on your own in your life, you're in dangerous territory. You're not going to heal. How about this one? How do I change? By honest, open, and willing behavior. That's how. H-O-W. Honest, open, willing. Okay, I just now got that. Okay, here we go. We're only as sick as the secrets we keep. How about that one? Think about it. Healing your spirit is that which you'll never regret. Comments or questions? Okay, we're in our last section now. Let's talk about how to heal a wounded spirit. This is a good one. Tend to your attitudes and actions, not someone else's. Now I realize, as a parent, as a mate, you know, as a member of the church, we certainly have relationships and obligations and concern about others. But if I'm in that emotional pit, let me, if I could, put myself before God and say, I want to get myself healthy first, or I can really help others. It's interesting. Peter, kind of a little concerned. He got a kind of a tough report about what's going to happen to him in the future. You know, he's going to be carried places he didn't want to go. And so Peter kind of thought, well, how about John over here? Maybe, you know, what's going to happen to him? This is Peter seeing him say to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? We don't know who this man is, but, you know, per se. But he said, Jesus said to him, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Of course, it was referring to John in the context. But notice, what did Jesus say here? Hey, what's going to happen to John? What did Jesus say? Well, that's pretty neat, John. You see, one of the problems we get into oftentimes is that we kind of, in some places, we want to take the place of the Lord, don't we? Hey, I already know what this person's done, and I know what they need to do, and I know exactly the solution, and until they solve it, it's going to become my great passion and focus in life. I'm going to throw something at you. I didn't include it in the outline. I like the concept. It may be debatable. But it's probably right. But let me throw this one at you. You tell me what you think. We can debate this. In the long run, no one else causes my hurt except myself. And the point is that over time, if I continue to hurt about a matter, it's my fault. Or put it this way, no one else causes my feelings. How about that? Is that right or wrong? I mean, there's some good points I can make for it. I don't know if I could state it as an absolute. Now, if something happens to me and I get angry instantaneously, I don't think I'm responsible for that per se. Events exist sometimes in discussion, talk, and sometimes I can have a flag hanger. Now, I don't necessarily act on it. You see this in traffic, sometimes I do. We'll go back at my driving, you know, weaknesses. But over time, is somebody else really responsible for my feelings?
I think over time is the point there, because we're not, you can't really say that as an absolute, because we can't help it if we grow up with an alcoholic father who beats us or something like that, if we have that background. But at some point in time, we have to take responsibility for how we are going to be going forward, and we have to take responsibility for how we react.
And so it's interesting, because there's some time, I'm going to tell you, I wish, I said, look, I can change my feelings. Tell me how. Let's get the formula, and let's put in the right code here, and then the right switches. But, you know, I think we can, for the most part. For the most part. I realize there are physiological things and other things, but I think for the most part, we can heal. And we can, even though we might not absolutely control those feelings, we don't need to let those feelings dominate us, but it may well be possible. I think it could completely heal, and for events that once created all kinds of emotion, no longer to be something that we look at with any emotion. Again, I know the mind is very complex. There will be times I can feel real gloomy. I'm going, what happened? And I've heard a song. And subconsciously, the song took me back to a period of time where things were happening, and I experienced the emotion of that time. Our minds are so programmed, so understand, we can't absolutely control things.
But I do believe that we need to look at ourselves and don't think we're in slavery to someone else. There's an old tract called A Better World Begins With Me. You probably never read the tract, but imagine if you're writing a tract by that title, how would it go? A better world begins with me. Finish it for me.
Get out of me and think of others.
Okay, get out of me and think of others. Absolutely. What else?
Because I'm the child of the King.
Now, how can you change the world by first changing yourself? You know, if you change yourself, then that influence may change others. I mean, it's like if you've been wounded, you've been hurt, you learn how to heal, and you heal, and then you help somebody else how to heal, guess what? Are we seeing maybe 2 Corinthians 1, 3 through 5 here? About those who have received the comfort of the Lord then help others who need help? And so that to me is the attitude that I should have.
rather than a top-down for me being the dictator of the universe and telling everybody what they ought to do. And there's a place, by the way, as a preacher and elder and a parent and to tell others. You know, it's not wrong to tell others like this. But the world generally is going to change when I submit to the Lord. And that influence allows others to submit to the Lord. And so there is a mindset there that's very, very important. Why is it the kids' book where, you know, it's kind of silly, but how the kid did something with a butterfly or something, and it changed this, it changed that, it changed that, and they had, there's some kid's story where it changed the whole world, you know, just one event. Now, this is very random. I can't remember it now. But.
Huh? There's a series, I guess, if you give a mouse a cookie, but there's another.
Okay, anyway, yeah, I forgot children. But now, as a coming grandparent, I'm going to try to get reacquainted with the children's book, so we'll get the opportunity to do that.
So, all right, healing the wounded spirit, the example of Jesus, Luke 23:34, you got to clean out the wound by giving it to God in prayer. Then Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they divided his garments and cast lots. Ephesians 4:32, Colossians 2:13. Let's talk about forgiveness. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God in Christ forgave you. Colossians 2:13. And you being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he is made alive together with him, having forgiven you of all trespasses. Colossians 2:13 is talking about baptism in Christ, the initial forgiveness. Ephesians 4:32 talks about an attitude toward others that results in forgiveness and a memory of what you've been forgiven of.
First step, if you are working on forgiveness, remember your forgiveness. If somehow that is no longer fresh and moving to us, then we can get in trouble, can't we? Remember the parable that Jesus told of the one who was forgiven the small debt and the one that was forgiven the huge debt. Remember that? If our attitude is not right toward our brothers, we are that person that has been forgiven a huge debt, and we are going to pursue our brother to their hurt out of a small debt. How do you find forgiveness? Let me ask you this. Let's just talk about this young person. A person has hurt us. What's the next step? Let's say, let's just rationally look at this, and let me take the next step. Let's say the hurt is it's personal, but it's not sinful. Okay? And let's talk about if somebody's done something that's sinful. Can somebody hurt us and not have sinned against us? Of course. Have all kinds of marriage. It has all kinds of relationships, you know. Have all kinds of their children. Sometimes, you know, you get a funny look at somebody. Maybe you're thinking about, you know, something absolutely different and the person's hurt at you. So, you know, there are a lot of ways, the way you choose your words and things you don't know about. So, this first off, somebody has hurt us, but they haven't sinned against us. Why do we do that? Why should we do that? And again, I realize not one size fits all, but let's try to talk generally. Somebody's hurt us. Somebody's hurt us, but they haven't sinned against us. What's the best way to handle that?
Try to assume the best.
Oh, yeah. Just make allowances.
Love hopes all things.
Huh?
Love hopes all things.
Hopes all things, yeah. Believes all things, yeah. And so, you know, I love to study personality types and other things about people because sometimes, you know, I can understand in some cases, well, they just got that personality type. You know, hopefully they'll learn and become more civilized, you know, put it that way. But sometimes, you know, some people are very direct. They don't know they hurt you. The bull in China shop. And sometimes they gain that ability or not. And sometimes I make some allowances. And if I'm close enough to them, I might say, and if Ed's had to say this to me many times, that, you know, I would rather you say it this way or did it this way. And that's good. But now let's talk about sin. Now, what is sin?
Transgression of the law.
Yeah, it's a transgression of the law. A lot of times we tend to put personal hurt in the area of sin, and that is a mistake. But if you want to put it there, and you're willing to go the proper procedure here, then we can work that out too. If someone has sinned against you, what's the worst thing you can do to them? What's the worst thing? If they sin?
Tell them.
talk about it instead of talking to them.
Okay, by talking to others, that's a bad thing, not talk to them, what else? What are some wrong approaches? Huh? Ignore it. Now we're talking about sin. Ooh, you're going to have to gain some courage. You're going to have to gain some control. Because you've got to talk to the other person. And if somebody's ever talked to you about something they think is sinful in your life, I want to assure you, most likely that person's, their stomach is probably turning inside out, wishing they didn't have to do that. So just be mindful of that. That's a hard thing to do. I'm a shepherd. I'm an elder here. I'm a preacher. That's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to do to sit down with someone who doesn't believe they've sinned and say, and they might be aware, that now just say, this is wrong. But you do that because sin requires what? If they're going to be forgiven, what does sin require? Repentance. You see, when Jesus hung on that cross and said, forgive them, but they don't know what they do, you know what Jesus did to those people? Did Jesus talk to those people? Yeah, through Peter. In Acts 2. In Acts 2:36, this Jesus whom you crucified, God made both Lord and Christ. And verse 37 says they were pricked of the heart and said, men and brethren, what should we do? And so when Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, it wasn't forgive them and then go on. There was a confrontation. Now, what if somebody will not repent? And let's not worry about the local church's response. But what should we do going forward if a person will not repent of sin?
Before we go on a little bit farther, can we explore the premise that we even have the right or privilege to consider a wrong done to us? Like we are given some right or privilege that we should not be wrong. I think of what Peter said when he said in 1 Peter chapter 2, for what credit is it when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently, but when you do good and suffer for it, you take it patiently. This is commendable before God.
Yeah.
For to this you are called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps. Who was, in verse 23, when he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously.
Yeah.
It's almost the premise that we will be done wrong.
Yes.
And when you are done wrong, shut your mouth about it. And you don't have the right to return in any reason. And by any means you return, it ought to be out of love. But you don't have the right or privilege for another human being to do right to you. That's not something that's...
Well, that's a great point. And the point I would make, if they're not a Christian and they did me wrong, I should want them to become Christian. Because that's what Jesus said here. Now, if they're not a Christian, they do me wrong, can I use the government? Did Paul appeal? Did he, Paul use his right? Yeah, he did. In fact, he's beating. Yeah, and so it's interesting here as we look at this. As a Christian, to somebody who sinned against me is not a Christian, I need want them to become a Christian. Okay. I think there is a limited realm within government where wrath can be, you know, where I can vengeance. I don't take vengeance, but there's a right to use government to an extent. But now with Christians, what do we have? Where a Christian has sinned against me, and I got Matthew 18, where I go to.
That's not for me and my privilege. It's for them and to help them.
Exactly. In every case, we're thinking of the other person. Huh, great point. In every case, we're thinking of the other person. Excellent. Like that. Okay. But there's some harmonization here as we look at that process.
Okay. It's important. These are lessons that don't stay learned. If I really need to preach a lesson 3-4 times, if not more, a year, it's right here. If this local church later would have internal problems, and problems that get us all stirred up, it's almost always going to follow these rounds of being willing to work out our problems. Because you know what can happen if we've got a personal issue and we don't resolve it? Let me tell you how the mind works.
what do we tend to do if we're bitter with somebody and we don't resolve it? Don't we tend to put them under a microscope? I've seen situations where elderships just picked a preacher apart. And there was some other issue they didn't want to talk about. And they ended up picking that person apart in a thousand ways. Don't let bitterness come into your life. Resolve your problems. Learn how, whether you've got to go on, take it patiently, and move on. But you should not be enslaved in anger and bitterness to unjust things that have been done. Thank you for your participation, for your participation in this class. I'll eventually have audio put up on the web if you wanted copies of this material. Thank you.